Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number two burns the hair in my nose, but we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 185 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Knowing Wheel returns after a break week last weekend. We were back at the Hungarian Grand Prix. Monaco without the barriers. A race that is pretty much always a banger when it rains and never when it's dry. And a track that has been on the calendar for far longer than most people realise. Jamie and I, we had a real nostalgic ramble last week. So today we're back with coordination, cohesion, and all-around good general conversations. Because once again, I got called out for apparently being too biased against Max Verstappen, so I'm sure today is going to run much better than that.
Oh yes, I will happily be biased towards Max Verstappen.
If we
can bring balance to the force in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's what we do well on this show, I feel like. Like, we're pretty balanced in terms of, there's not many drivers we equally like or dislike up and down the grid. Like, no. I feel we balance each other out pretty well, with the exception of maybe Esteban Ocon. And bizarrely we both like Zhou Guan Yu.
Do you? When did that happen?
I've always said I like Zhou. I always preface whenever we give Zhou Guan Yu slander that I like him as a person. Just yes. He's not a particularly great Formula One driver, and you seem to be accepting that as well.
I think, at this point. I'm slowly realising that might be true, but
it's a sad reality, but yes.
It is. I'll sigh.
Of course, obviously, timestamps, as always, will be linked down in the description below. We got to get back into routine, Jamie, of reminding people to make sure they drop us a sub, drop us a follow, all that good stuff. We are nearly at 650 subscribers, and of course, we're trying to reach 1,000 so then we can monetize the show. But obviously, the first news of the weekend actually came not long after last week's show, because of course, on the Knowing Wheel timeline, that's always what happens. It wasn't a big shock, was it? But Magnussen has been confirmed that he will not be staying with Haas next year.
Indeed, and it seems like Esteban Ocon is going there. Yet to be announced, but no doubt we'll go out about an hour after we release this episode, probably.
No, it'll be after we record it, before it's released.
Maybe that's the case too, but yes, it will be Esteban Ocon next to Ollie Bearman, which is a bit of a baptism of fire for Bearman. But yeah, hopefully that won't bring fireworks, but hopefully for the entertainment point of view, it will bring fireworks. And I don't see Magnussen finding a seat anywhere else, but it would be very funny if Audi Sauber just sign him up and just recreate Haas this year. But we will see.
I mean, if you've got the resources of a Haas team, I mean, we've said it before, haven't we? It's been another driver that has been odd giving him so much praise this year. But I've said Hülkenberg's done a very good job. Why on earth, when you know Hülkenberg's been doing that much better than Magnussen, would you then proceed to hire Magnussen as well? I mean, sensibly, the only team that was going to hire him for next year was Haas, simply to keep some stability there. A bit like, obviously, when he came back in 2022. But, you know, I think, unfortunately, yeah, you're probably right. Him, Zhou Guan Yu, Logan Sargeant, the writing is on the wall, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't see them. Just the number of drivers who are waiting for a seat, I don't think those three have done enough over the last couple of years to warrant an extension, which is quite sad for those. But, well, sad for Joe. I'm not particularly bothered about Magnussen or Sargeant in that regard. But Magnussen, he's had a good career. I think he's been in F1 long enough for how much talent he has.
I mean, he's been two years out of various times? He's been in the sport for a decade. from start to now.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive in the grand scheme of things, isn't it? You know, that's not a bad resume. That's, well, the same length as Romain Grosjean, really, in the end, wasn't it? Slightly shorter, I think. But obviously Grosjean, again, had years out here and there. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? And I think Magnussen is always one of those drivers that, I mean, bizarrely, isn't it still, obviously, the fact that his only ever podium came in his first ever Grand Prix. It's never been as good as it was on day one. Mm. But he came into the sport with so much hype behind him from, obviously, was it Formula Renault, wasn't it? I think he dominated the year before, wasn't it? Because he didn't come up through, he didn't come up through, like, the standard GP3, GP2 route, if I remember correctly.
No, no. And he does hold the equal record for best result on debut, doesn't he? So, sensibly, without Indy 500 or the first ever race.
No, I don't think so. Loads of drivers have come second.
Really?
I think. Well, equal a record. Few drivers have. He came third, though, didn't he?
No, he came second.
No, he was second in the end, wasn't he? Yeah, no, I guess obviously behind...
Rosberg.
No. Eh?
Yeah. 2014 Australia, he came behind Rosberg. Ricciardo.
Sorry, I thought you meant Rosberg came second on debut.
No.
I was like, no, he didn't.
No, Magnussen.
Yeah, no, I know Magnussen did. I forgot, obviously, because Ricciardo got disqualified, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Hamilton did, Villeneuve did.
Well, Hamilton came third, Villeneuve came second.
Oh, that was it, sorry, yeah.
And then it was that one Italian guy, wasn't it, back for Ferrari in the mid-60s.
No idea.
Like Biaggi or something, whatever his name was.
Probably he
sounds like the name of a really shit motorbike, but there we are.
you'll have done a short on him probably on your main channel at some point.
Probably at some point back in day. Yeah, but I think Magnussen, he's one of those drivers. But I think, let's be fair, sensibly, I'm going to bring this back to the front, Jamie. He'll probably end up in World Endurance next year, or IMSA, or maybe IndyCar, won't he?
Probably. I just really want to see him. Like, now he knows he's on his way out, just rack up more penalty points and get Hülkenberg a podium by crashing out the entire grid. That'd be great.
I'll be impressed if he can do that, but you know what? We'll live in hope.
I know that if Magnussen tried to crash out everyone, Hülkenberg would just have a mechanical DNF.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The staggering thing is, what worries me now, is that we could genuinely see a world, because let's be fair, Hülkenberg-wise, we are really rambling. Hülkenberg probably isn't going to get a podium before the end of next year, is he? Sauber
probably
next
not.
Year is absolutely going to be a write-off. But there's a very real possibility that he can come to 2026 without a podium ever and suddenly just dominate the first race of the year. And get
I would
an
love
easy
it.
Win.
I'd
it
be very surprised. I would be very
it would be
surprised.
Absolute scenes. But it could happen. It could happen. Shall we actually move into the Grand Prix weekend then, Jamie?
Yes.
After our five-minute rambles to kick things off. I mean, free practice was actually quite dramatic in the end. Quite a few drivers having issues. Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton and Zhou Guanyu are probably the three
biggest
ones, weren't they? When all was said and done. Obviously Zhou Guanyu living off the highs of, what was it, P5 last year, wasn't
P5
it?
On the grid.
When he out-qualified Charles Leclerc. Remind me again, obviously, from that great qualifying session, how did he get on in the race?
His engine clicked into the wrong setting, so he couldn't start the car properly. And
By
then he took
itself.
Out three drivers. Yeah, that was the beginning of the end, I think. If he'd have got like P8 or something that race, his whole career could look different. But
could it?
Alas.
Could it really? Fair enough. That was the we'll make a documentary on this one day.
The defining
race
moment.
Of Zhou Guanyu's F1 career. Oh man. But no, obviously a few scary moments in free practice. Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton both finding the barriers in the end, didn't they? Which was not ideal. But as we moved into qualifying, there was a little bit of moisture on the circuit. And it made no real difference, did it, in the end? At least to begin with, because everyone went out on the soft compound tyre anyway. Until one driver managed to find himself on a wet patch of road and out of the session. And if you had to put money on it, it was either going to be Sergio Perez or Logan Sargeant. And this time round, it was, drumroll please, Sergio Perez, who put it in a wall, to the shock
Again.
Of not many.
Exactly the same thing at Silverstone, really, 2 weeks ago. So, it's insane. Is that, what, one Q3 out of six or seven races now, I want to say?
I'm trying to remember, yeah.
He definitely was there in Imola, but was, like, ninth.
Oh, what, since we came back to Europe?
Yeah, I think he's had one Q3 appearance in that time, which is incredible. And once again, and behind Logan Sargeant in qualifying, who's still yet to out-qualify Alex Albon. But,
He did make Q3 in Austria, I believe.
Is that so? 2 out of 7 then.
So he's 16th in Hungary, 20th at Silverstone, 8th in Austria, 11th in Spain, 16th in Canada and Monaco, and 11th at Imola. He didn't make Q3.
Oh, really? So one.
Prior to that, yeah, he'd been no lower than 6th on the grid.
Yeah.
And now he's been no higher than 8th on the grid.
Crazy. Craziness. And yeah, he really does seem like he's on his way out, I think, by the summer break, really. And also in Q1, Ricciardo topped it, didn't he? Which was quite interesting. He just saw Perez in a wall and was like, right, here we go.
My time. I mean, we've got to talk about this, haven't we? Because there is more and more rumours now coming out that he could be dropped in the summer break. Basically because that's when Red Bull can actually initiate his contract clauses. Mm. And apparently it's one or the other, isn't it? Between 100 points off that off Max and 5 places behind him. And if I'm right in saying, he is currently 141 points off Max. So that is mathematically impossible to close back in on. And currently 6 places behind him in the championship. Admittedly, he could get that back within 5 quite easily next time out if he just beats Lewis. I'd think something that hasn't happened since Miami. So not looking great. Not looking great for Sergio Perez right now. And he could end up 8th still behind George Russell.
Yeah. And he probably will end up 8th by the end of the season if he does get that Red Bull seat.
Yeah. Easily.
Yeah. But that was another shocking Q1 was my tip for pole, George Russell.
Yes. Yes.
Out in Q1 because Mercedes forgot to put fuel in the car.
Well, he basically went out too early, didn't he, after the red flag? Because the red flag came out with like 6.5 minutes to go. He was one of the first ones to go back out there because a lot of drivers thought it was going to rain more. But rather than Mercedes, obviously, when he was then going quicker, realising, we should have put more fuel in this car, they just let him go out. And then when the track got better, he'd already come back in. Really just poor strategic blunder by Merck, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, really poor. And he lived to pay the price. So
he
out
really did
in 16th or 17th, was it
16th? Crazy. 17th he was actually in the end, because Perez was 16th.
Yes,
which I was happy in the end, in the nicest way possible, that Perez was also out in Q1, so it wasn't another driver that would have ended up ahead of him was out in the first session. That was quite nice. And of course they were joined by Alpine, as Jamie and I hopefully are both representing the Renault Formula 1 team this weekend. And of course, for the shock of nobody, it's your favourite Q1 bench warmer, it's Zhou Guan Yu.
Hey, you got Q2 in Silverstone.
Wow. Well.
Yeah, Ocon and Gasly did the exact same thing as Russell, so neither had the fuel to do the end of the session.
Yeah, there you go. It tells you everything you need to know when George Russell makes the same strategy as the French. Q2 was the only qualifying session without a red flag, but it didn't stop it from being dramatic, did it? Because Lewis Hamilton, I will admit, was quite lucky come the end of that Q2. Mm. He squeezed by 1/100th of a second over Nico Hülkenberg.
No Mercedes in the top 10 would have been pretty appalling when both of us were tipping them for good things before the weekend.
We'll see it. 4 poles in a row here prior to this weekend.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty insane stat. And obviously like 9 of the last 11 races they've had pole here, isn't it? It's only
something
ridiculous.
Like that.
They're tally.
But he did get through.
He did, luckily. So it was Bottas, Hülkenberg, Albon, Sargeant and K-Mag out in Q2. So weirdly, it ended up kind of being the top 5 teams, except for it was V-Carb, who filled up kind of 8th and 9th on the grid. Sorry, 9th and 10th on the grid, wasn't it? But that didn't stop Q3 being dramatic, because after Verstappen had originally taken fastest, Lando then put about 0.3 on his head. Max wasn't happy. And then Yuki Tsunoda decided he would have an almost airplane crash trying to push to find time in a really odd spot.
Really, really odd spot, and really bad that the curbs could launch a car like that. But yeah, he went flying into the barrier. I actually had mates who were sitting at the grandstand at the chicane, so they got a very good view of it. Really, really high energy, a lot of debris on the track, obviously a red flag, and that almost cost Norris pole position, because Verstappen and Piastri both got their second runs over the line before this crash, and Lando was on a lap, but both Piastri and Verstappen couldn't beat Norris's time. They got within a tenth and Norris was still on pole on his first lap and didn't get a chance to do a second lap. So that would have been very unfortunate for Norris, but thankfully for him, he kept it.
He did manage to in the end, and it could have been one little man sabotaging another one. There was a bit of controversy with this, though, wasn't there? Because there was, I think it was about 2 minute 15 left on the clock. And at a short track like Hungary, easily enough time, obviously, to get the cars back out there. And, you know, clearly some of the FIA knew this, because obviously they did pause the clock rather than just saying it wasn't going to restart. But someone else at the FIA made Fernando Alonso do his weigh-in before the end of the session, which of course meant he couldn't go back in the car, rather hilariously. They forced Alonso to end his session early, which ultimately made no difference, but was quite funny to watch his tantrum.
And imagine if the track had improved by getting drier or heating up or whatever in that time. He would have been absolutely screwed over by an individual error. I get the feeling he might be in England.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Marshall trying to get his revenge on the Spanish after what
happened last Sunday.
Or from 2007.
Wait, what were you thinking about?
The Euros final that was a week
ago. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't really care. I've
rewritten it out of my mind as much as possible. But yeah, Alonso was very annoyed.
It was. Understandably to a certain point, but throwing your coat around the place and making just random personnel pick it up is a little bit like a two-year-old who's having a bit of a temper tantrum. But it did mean, for the first time since 2012, and their third time ever, if you read McLaren's original tweet, that is, that they managed to get a front row lockout, which isn't their third time ever, it's their 63rd time.
Didn't they have about six in one season back in the 90s?
Oh, back in 88, they won 15 of 16 races. They had a 1-2 most weekends, I would have thought.
Yeah.
but it did mean Lando Norris was on pole, and for the fifth time in his Formula One career, he had the opportunity to try and hold on to the lead down to turn one. And as we got into the Grand Prix, that wasn't the case.
No. He's. You told me a stat beforehand that he's started in first in Grand Prix or in sprint races five times. And is
it's
still
always
yet
ended
to lead.
Up being for Grand Prix, I believe. I don't think it's ever actually been for a sprint. Oh, yeah, sorry, China sprint, of course.
And, yeah, has still yet to lead any of those races after turn one, which
Madness. Is
quite good going. Very good going, actually, to be that consistent at bottling your poles. But lo and behold, here we are again. Oscar Piastri launched himself off the line and got his nose on the inside. Norris was very rude, I thought, trying to cut Piastri off so aggressively. But he kept his nose in, just about had the space to get down the inside. And that allowed Verstappen to make it three wide on the outside after getting a nice little slipstream. And three wide into turn one, as we've seen many times at Belgium, in the top of my head, that often a corner like this with three cars wide results in a bit of carnage. But this time Verstappen decided to avoid it and drove off the track on the exit. And, got into P2, but thought he could keep it. And clearly he was never going to be able to keep that.
No. And I mean, it was quite funny, wasn't it? Because, I mean, Lando was very diplomatic on the radio as well. But we all kind of knew it, didn't we? This was one of Max's typical, I'm on the outside, I'm never really going to make the corner, but I'm going to keep my foot in anyway, wasn't it? There was no way he was making that, ever. And he obviously tried to blame it on Lando, barged him out. And you're going, well, Oscar could have barged out Lando, and Lando could have done the same thing. Then where could Max have gone in that scenario? You know, he was never making it. He was never slowing it down for the corner, wasn't he?
He was trying to cry referee, basically.
Basically,
to be like, almost similar to what he did in Austria a few times.
Because he basically said, he was like, well, I got barged out. Going, no, you could have just backed out of it. Like, there was another option here. But obviously, Max Verstappen never sees that other option. And of course, on many times, yes, it's worked for him. But it does start to feel now that... it's a bit odd, isn't it? Because obviously, I was talking about this with my dad earlier on. when Lando and Leclerc over the last couple of years, when obviously Max has had that ridiculously dominant car, when things like that happen, you think, oh, it's not really worth the fight because he's got 15 miles an hour on me down the straights anyway. It does seem now that everyone's kind of, you know, whether they're at McLaren, whether they're at Ferrari, whether they're at Mercedes, of kind of going, we've got a shot of beating him this weekend. We may as well actually take it to the FIA. And suddenly the FIA are actually having to clamp down on it, which would be fantastic if drivers actually had to stay on the circuit more often.
Yeah, and it also just shows that throughout the entire of last year when you were crying about nobody fighting Verstappen, and I was here saying, well, they're only not fighting because there's no point. And when there is a point, they will fight. And I was right. So
it's starting to happen. I will give you that.
Everyone is fighting him because the Red Bull isn't actually that good anymore. No. And yeah, whisper it, but McLaren was easily the fastest car this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think you could argue against that.
I think the Red Bull was probably slightly quicker than the Mercedes or Ferrari, but a long way off that McLaren for sure.
Yeah, this was, I think we knew, well, we won't talk about our predictions, but this was a weekend where we knew that McLaren probably,
low speed corners,
once Friday
lots of curb
it happened,
use. Yeah.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be a good weekend for them. But obviously, yeah, Max completely off the road at turn one. He rejoins P2. Hamilton actually tried to have a look around his outside, but Max crowded him out, obviously, through turn two, which I wouldn't normally bring up, but of course, as we'll talk back to it a bit later on, he's quite a relevant point. So that obviously meant Norris was able to get back past Lewis Hamilton off the exit of the first couple of corners. And, you know, again, I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. You know, I don't hide that ever on this show. It is nice, you've got to admit, to see him really going for it again, isn't it, now? He's got that hunger.
Sure. Yeah, and I can live safely in the knowledge that he won't get an eighth title.
So. Give it time, Jimmy. Give it time. Ferrari are going to screw him, yeah. Who am I kidding?
Leclerc would beat him anyway, even if Ferrari didn't.
No, he wouldn't. Leclerc's been done by Sainz recently. Don't give me that.
We'll see.
But yeah, I mean, obviously Max then immediately was on the radio to the team saying that was unfair. He shouldn't have to give the place back. And I don't know whether they've had a falling out pre-weekend or something, but GP, pretty much from the get-go, was not willing to play games with Max this weekend, was it? And that was fantastic to watch, as someone that doesn't like Verstappen, because, I mean, you could pretty much see immediately, he basically spent 65 laps of this Grand Prix losing his cool.
To be honest, from an entertainment alone point of view, it was very funny, even as a Max fan.
It was one of those things where you watch, neither of us are parents, this isn't a parenting podcast, but when someone else's kid is being a pain, and you know full well it's not your child, so it doesn't
matter.
It's not
my responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, it was quite amusing just to see it all kind of deteriorating as the race went on through many, many different things, but
and I mean, this is the thing
as
well.
They'll get back together, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure they will. You know, we had all these years of people going on the Hamilton moans on the radio, and I think now people are realising, aren't they? They play a lot more radio from reigning world champion drivers.
Yeah.
It just so happened that obviously that was Hamilton for a lot of years. Now everyone is realising that Max is doing the same thing. They all are.
The radio is there to make the coverage more interesting.
And exactly.
What's more interesting than having a pantomime villain? And for a while it was Lewis being, my tyres are dead, when he's clearly still winning.
Follow my tyres!
And now you've
it's
got
Max
Verstappen
just effing and blinding everywhere.
Bleeping the machine everywhere. Yeah, it was amusing. And I was surprised he lost his rag so badly over this Turn 1 incident. The few things later in the race, as it develops, that I was like, yeah, fair enough. But yeah, this was quite surprising. And Crofty had it out for sim racing. I don't know if you listened to the Sky Sport.
I heard about this afterwards.
He mentioned about four times in 70 laps that Max was up sim racing until 3 a.m.
Apparently it was more than that, yeah.
It's crazy.
Which always makes me chuckle as well, because of course, none of us mentioned that when he was winning races still, did they?
No. And he actually did that in... there was a race earlier this season.
Imola,
he did the 24-hour race. Yeah.
Yeah, Imola. I mean, obviously, admittedly, you know, they're being quite close to the end, but he still won. Anyway, he's been...
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have been going, oh, well, he's been sim racing since, like, 2021. He's actually been sim racing a lot longer than that, first of all. But admittedly, this year's been the first time he's done 24-hour races on Grand Prix weekends. Which...
Yeah.
I might start to argue... potentially is... I'd be surprised if he does another one. I don't actually think there is another one this year, to be fair. They will overlap with the Grand Prix,
like,
but still.
It was back then when Hamilton was dominating. You know, if Hamilton had a bad race, it was because he was distracted with lifestyle. When Hamilton has a good season, it's because he's free to do what he likes.
Exactly. It's stupid. They're all criticised for doing anything other than driving the car around, aren't they?
And even driving the car, they're criticised for.
Well, exactly. unless you're Oscar Piastri, who takes bribes off fans now. That TikTok is so funny.
I didn't see that.
So a guy on Thursday gave him €5 and basically forced Oscar to keep it. And Oscar basically, he tries to give him it back because, of course, he's a multi-millionaire. Like, what's €5 going to do? And then the guy goes, no, keep it. It's good luck. So he kind of just goes, all right, okay, and pockets it. And obviously then it did end up being good luck. It was incredible.
Wow. He's going to get done for insider trading.
He is. That's not how insider trading works, but okay.
No.
It's nowhere near close.
I watch Suits. I know terms.
Oh, dearie me. I got bored of Suits after like 5 episodes, man. It was so just
bizarre.
Nah, it's
bizarre. A great show. Would recommend.
Oh, dearie. Oh, no. You're
down a rabbit hole here.
Oh, no. I mean, it got worse for Max, though, pretty quickly, didn't it? Because Red Bull then let Hamilton undercut him, which, of course, had it been anyone else, Max probably wouldn't have been particularly happy. But as it was Lewis Hamilton, he was livid because rent-free and all that.
Well, it is also a poor strategy from Red Bull. Because this is probably the second hardest track to pass at all season.
Up there, isn't it? Yeah,
it's definitely up there.
It was actually quite surprising, though, this weekend. I'll give it credit.
There were a few overtakes. But like the fact that the tyre deck is so high, the undercut was so powerful... And everyone could see this because Hülkenberg undercut from 15th to 7th with a 3-lap undercut or something on the entire grid earlier in the race. The Red Bull were just kind of caught napping and Hamilton undercut him from, just with a 1-lap undercut from about 2 seconds back, wasn't it? So, or not, they didn't even pit him straight away because they knew they'd lost it on that one lap. So, yeah, it was almost like Red Bull are usually on it on strategy, and this weekend felt like they weren't quite, for Verstappen at least. I think Perez's strategy was quite good, but you know, you can't
very different
with
context
what you've got, aren't
to
you?
Perez's race, though.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it was quite funny because, of course, again, then he was basically on the radio going, you know, you've completely ruined my race, all this, that, and the other, which does make me laugh when they're meant to be a team. And just how quickly Max will throw everybody else under the bus when things aren't going his way.
I feel like he wasn't the coolest character
in the room.
The grid.
Yeah. I mean, for the championship's sake, it's gutting that we've only got one more race after this before a break. Like, imagine if we have like a spell of like 4 races in the next 5 weeks and he's got to deal with kind of this now. It's a bit of a shame in terms of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But of course, then obviously he tried to make a move on Lewis at turn two, which was exactly what he did to Lewis on lap one. Then moaned about that on the radio, and GP just went, get a grip, man. Stop crying,
think he
get
moaned
back
about
on the track.
It.
He did? Did you not hear this?
As in, no, he did, but only because the car wouldn't turn. He wasn't moaning about Lewis.
No, he said Lewis, he said he was alongside. He deserved space.
Oh, yeah, he did. And that was ridiculous. But
yeah,
the car...
And GP was there going, get on with it.
He also, Verstappen was easily, like, he was pretty much ahead into the braking zone. That if he just did it normally, he would have made it through. But he tried to brake so late that he ran wide himself before Hamilton even took his line.
Exactly.
It was so odd.
But he lost his cool, hadn't he? You could tell by the way he was driving all day. He just had no control over his emotions, which is not ideal when you've got a Formula 1 car underneath you. But of course, obviously, you know, Red Bull would learn from that, wouldn't they? As they came around for the second stops. And once again, let both Leclerc and Hamilton undercut him this time, which of course Max was ecstatic with.
Yeah, and fair play to Leclerc because he actually drove really well.
Quietly good race, considering how bad it's been recently.
Yeah, and the fact he was close enough to Hamilton and Leclerc to spring the undercut, and to Hamilton and Verstappen, sorry, to spring the undercut was fair play to the Ferrari pace recently. Yeah, Hamilton was already ahead of Verstappen, but just extended his gap to about 4 or 5 seconds after Verstappen eventually pitted and came out 5th behind Leclerc, despite easily being the 3rd fastest car-driver combination of the day. But yeah, strategy wasn't on his side, and yeah, he made it very well known to his team, especially when he just ignored their instructions to drive slowly on the hard tyres, and which that radio message was brilliant, where it was like GP was saying, oh, that's a nice welcome to these tyres, going fastest of anyone, and then he was like, I don't bleeping care, bleep this, bleep that, you've ruined my race with the strategy. It was honestly very entertaining.
Was it Hannah Schmitz, isn't it, is their race engineer? She always looks like she's on the brink of tears, no matter when I've seen her. This weekend, I can understand it. Oh, you know, I'm not trying to discredit her. You know, every strategist at some point will get it wrong. That's just the nature of the sport. It was more just the fact, that this is the first weekend in a long time I can actually understand why she looked on the brinks of tears. Actually, well, yeah, I was going to make a really dark joke about Jos Verstappen there, but I won't.
Oh, no. That's not...
In other news, though, obviously Sergio Perez, George Russell, basically obviously from the back of the grid, basically just finished where they should, didn't they? By overcutting all of the slower cars.
Yeah, all of the midfield basically pit in the first 10 laps, and they didn't pit in the first 10 laps, went long, and took all of them by actually showing their car pace, which was clearly not in the same league as the cars in the midfield. So, they ended up P7, P8.
Which is exactly where they should have
been. Exactly where they should have been, yeah.
When you consider everything else. And I mean, it was obviously, we'd had all the max theatrics, right, most of the race up to this point. But it did seem to be spreading up and down the field, didn't it? Because obviously you mentioned there about how Leclerc and Hamilton both drove brilliant races. And obviously that then gave McLaren a bit of problems towards the end, didn't it? Because they were worried that Hamilton was going to undercut Lando, so gave him the optimal strategy, which put him out ahead of Oscar, and then tried to get them to swap back.
Yeah, and McLaren, I just think they're worrying too much, because Hamilton wasn't really close enough to undercut.
They were going to have to mess it up royally, weren't they?
Yeah, I think there was a 6-7 second gap between Norris and Hamilton. So if Hamilton had pit, they can had just chance pit to react. Norris the next lap. Yeah. It felt like they were making an issue for themselves with this strategy of pitting Norris first, and they could have just pit Piastri one lap and then Norris the next lap, and he'd have still been ahead of Hamilton, even if Hamilton got that one lap undercut. And yeah, the fact they sent Piastri two laps longer than Norris was very confusing.
But they did this last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
They completely screwed Oscar over here.
Yeah, because he lost the podium, didn't he? And I think the reason they didn't pit Piastri the very next lap was because they would have been like side by side, which is another, you know, that could have been a disaster, really. But it was strange. They accidentally gave Norris the lead, or maybe intentionally gave Norris the lead, and expected him to give it back with no complaints. Which, when you've got a driver who's had one Grand Prix win in six seasons of F1, you know, they don't come by all the time. Giving up wins is going to be not easy, especially for a driver when it's been, you know, a little bit of needle between these two. I think Norris doesn't have it all his own way like he'd like it at McLaren.
Oh, no,
because
exactly.
Of how good Piastri has been. So, it was just a bizarre situation.
I mean, this is something we spoke about pretty much from the get-go last year, didn't we, as well? You know, Lando Norris, obviously, he came in to Formula 1, teammates for Sainz for a year. 2 years, wasn't it? Sorry. Sainz got the better of him, but they were pretty good mates. Sainz was able to keep him at an arm's length. He wasn't too worried about it. And obviously, towards the end of the second year, Lando pretty much then was on par with him. Daniel Ricciardo steps in. He's the big dog. You know, he's confident, he's cocky, he's brash. You wipe the floor with him, because he's just not cut out anymore for what he needed to do within that team. Suddenly, you're very confident. You know, you're the big dog in that McLaren team. All the engineers want to work on your car. Oscar Piastri steps in. He's a bit more quiet. He's a bit more reserved. He can, if he figures out these Pirelli tyres, he can absolutely drive any race car up to 99% immediately. Suddenly, not everything's going your way within the one Formula One team you've ever worked in. I can understand Norris's perspective of obviously, you know, I've got myself into the lead. Especially, obviously, you know, those couple of laps where he deliberately went quicker as well to pull away. You know, I can understand that. But on the other hand, he's also got to appreciate that he was only in that position because Oscar was willing to sacrifice a potentially even bigger advantage over him to make sure Lando didn't get undercut by the cars behind. But of course, the bigger thing than anything else going on right now is that one of these two is potentially in a championship fight come the end of the year. As much as I like him, that's not going to be Oscar Piastri.
Not this year. Yeah, and I don't know. If McLaren were more ruthless, they'd have given Norris the win, I think. But McLaren are a bit of a family, and they know they need to keep their drivers happy, and it's going to be tough.
I think, yeah.
Given after the pit stops, I think they made the right call, but they should have been way firmer. They shouldn't have been like, oh, Lando, do it at your own convenience.
Yeah,
the right thing. You know you're going to need Oscar. They should have been, Lando, you're giving this place back. That's an order.
Yeah. Or just not done it in the first place. Because, yes. I get as well, obviously, at the end of the day, Lando Norris is a fantastic asset to that team.
Mm.
You know, we've said this so many times before. How many times have Red Bull come knocking on the door for him? You know, all this, that, and the other. But annoyingly for them, Oscar Piastri also, if he figures out these Pirelli tyres, is also a fantastic asset to that team. You know, I can see down the line this being Hamilton, Rosberg, Senna, Prost. This kind of relationship between them. You know, if they end up nailing the 2026 regs or something like that. I can see this becoming a bigger issue for them. But ultimately, today at least, it was kind of disaster averted, wasn't it? And of course, the last one, but certainly not least, was the pensioner and the rich kid. They had team orders as well. And it was the rich kid that came out on top this time. Because Alonso was screwed over for strategy, and then Stroll didn't let him back by.
Yes, which I'm sure will go down very well with all the Spanish people on social media. Because Stroll nabbed that 1 point that Aston Martin are fighting for right now. Alonso finished 11th, Stroll 10th.
Shout out to Tsunoda for beating both of them on a one stop.
Yeah, crazy.
Madness.
And the RB wasn't... It was all right, wasn't it, actually? They both qualified the top 10, but... Yeah,
it was on par with
the last flashpoint from this race.
Of course.
Last but not least, was a small throwback to 2021 with Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton just crashing into each other because it's been too long since we saw that. And yeah, Verstappen looked like he was playing Rocket League, which our social media has gone to town with already. Really. Just needless collision, to be honest. And I think I agree with the stewards, but you probably don't.
I can understand why they gave it a no further action, because ultimately the perpetrator, the one that should take more blame, came off worse. And ultimately, you know, we've said this before, haven't we? The FIA base things on the outcome rather than the actual collision, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Which is still not right. And I don't mean this incident specifically, I just mean generally is not the right way of going about things still. Ultimately, you know, Hamilton obviously gone round that Williams. Verstappen basically the red mist had descended fully, hadn't it, at this point. We all knew it was. He took a desperate lunge at the inside. He had no control over the car. Lewis, I think, did ultimately panic a little bit. You know, I don't think there was any malicious intent by Lewis. You know, to try and turn in or make contact or anything. You know, I've seen, what's it, Hintower Frentzen's been under fire today, hasn't he? Because he tried to claim it was like Schumacher and Villeneuve in 1997.
Really?
And you're just going, well, that's not really the case, is it? In a tweet now, he's deleted. You know, I do genuinely think in this instant that obviously Lewis probably panicked slightly. And then it was just more about preserving his own car. You know, it was at the angle he turned in at. Was kind of, hopefully, at the worst case scenario, is he comes off worse than me. But at the end of the day, Max was just completely out of control into that first corner, wasn't he? He wasn't getting it stopped.
Yeah. I think I would like to have seen, with how late Verstappen braked and the lunge he was going for, he might have stayed within the white lines, but he probably wouldn't have left a car's width on the outside.
Well, what he would have done... Well, Hamilton, first of all, would have... If Hamilton had sort of braked and got out of it, he would have switched him back.
Yeah.
What also would have happened is Max would have ran off the road like he did on lap one, said, I was ahead at the apex, it's my place. Whether he kept
maybe,
it or not.
Maybe. But I saw Verstappen's point about the move under braking, because he does go for the lunge. I don't think he's ever going to pull off the move. But
he'd already made the mistake. He was, to be honest, if anything, he's lucky that he's able to claim that. because he'd already messed it up.
I do think, I see his point that the lockup, or the double lockup, only happened because he had to turn the wheel to avoid Hamilton's move to the inside.
No, and the lockup had happened because he completely fired it in too late.
Maybe, but yeah, I can see why it's no further action. Lewis did move early for the corner, in my opinion. But I'm not blaming Lewis, but I think it had a part to play in the whole thing.
I can understand that as well. I think that's probably a fair analysis. I think at the end of the day, we can also both agree, had that taken both cars out, probably would have been a penalty for Max. The fact that they ended up finishing in the order they went into that corner in probably was, everyone was there going, you know.
I'm not sure.
Really?
If they'd have both crashed out, I still think it might have been no further action.
I feel that there would have been either a grid penalty or penalty points on his license for Max. Because he locked up.
Toto Wolff would have been in the stewards arguing Max's case.
Oh, probably. Yeah, that would have been really odd for Toto.
Because he wants Verstappen to drive his car in the future.
Desperately wants it. So. Well, this is going to be something I wanted to talk about as we get in towards the end of the show. Red Bull, right now, are under so much pressure from so many angles, aren't they? You've got a Max Verstappen who, let's be fair, it's not, I wouldn't put money on it or anything like that, could be out the door at the end of the year if he doesn't have confidence in that team. You've clearly got no direction in where you're taking the car at the moment. Whether that's completely because you've lost Newey or a part of the impact of obviously Newey going. You've got this power struggle between Helmut Marko, Jos Verstappen and Christian Horner. You've got all this pressure coming from the board with what on earth are you doing with this junior team that's got a guy in his fourth season and an Australian pensioner in the car when we got Liam Lawson waiting on the sidelines. You've lost Dietrich Mateschitz, who, let's be fair, was a gentle giant behind the scenes that it was. And I think kind of people now are appreciating this a lot more. What Dietrich said is what went. You know, that was, you didn't argue with him. What he said was the final say on the matter.
And that's a bit of a power vacuum, isn't it?
It's just everyone, you know, I think we've said it before, haven't we, unfortunately? It is just a small penis contest down there. You know, there's more
Franz
and more
Tost uncertainty. Has gone as well, who actually drove a hard line in
exactly.
the team too.
Yeah. You're getting more and more problems now where there's, you know, and I wonder whether some of this pressure as well is that actually they're kind of going, we're screwed for 2026, engine-wise. You know, whether they're just further behind the other teams or they perceive they're further behind from the other teams. There is a lot going on at Red Bull this year. That gap is down to, what, 74 points, am I right in saying?
It came down an awful lot, didn't it? What,
it's 76 points, sorry.
Now, a 1-2 versus 5-7 this weekend.
Exactly. So, sorry, 76 points driver's title. You're looking at 61 constructors. There's a real possibility. I would, if I was a betting man now, yeah, obviously we'll see things change after the summer break, won't we? You know, Ferrari might come back stronger. I would say Red Bull are in a real situation where they could lose this constructors title. Because let's not forget as well, you've got Perez trashing the car every other weekend. That's going to mean they can't bring upgrades soon.
And you know, that's going to be got limited wind tunnel time compared to McLaren.
Exactly. They're losing more and more theoretical performance every 3 months due to the aerodynamic testing and everything like that. There's real problems brewing at Red Bull. And let's there be are. Fair, Max Verstappen is not a driver that will sit around whilst they've got problems.
No, well, why should he? He's got the pick of the
there,
keys.
There is an element of that, exactly. You know, they've given him everything since he was 17 years old. you'd hope that might count for something.
There's no loyalty in sport these days.
Exactly, but there isn't. You know, it's a fair point. Could they be in a situation where, you know, I think if I was going to have the bet on one of them, I'd say the Constructors is more under threat. Had Lando got the extra 7 points for the win, that gap's down less than 70 points. And we're, what, just over halfway through the season, aren't we? Mm-hmm. How many races have we done? 13,
11 races
14?
To go, 13 done.
Yeah. There could be real problems at Red Bull in the second half of the year, which, tell you what, for Drive to Survive would be incredible viewing. But I mean,
just for Formula One as a whole, I think.
Exactly. You know, there's a real possibility, you know, for a dark cloud. And I mean, really, there's been a dark cloud over Red Bull since Christian Horner decided to send pictures of his ghoulies to people. But, you know, this.
Yeah, they papered over the cracks in the first five races, didn't they?
Exactly.
Six races.
It really does feel like they're kind of going, yeah, we've got real problems here now. Might be in real
And they might end
trouble.
Up with a situation of like Carlos Sainz and Liam Lawson being the only drivers who want to drive for them next season.
Well, this is what I was going to say as well. You know, you're in a situation where the main guy you wanted to get in, Carlos Sainz, can't join because Jos Verstappen is so problematic with his dad. Let's be fair, Carlos Sainz Sr., much better driver than Jos Verstappen.
Probably why Jos has got such a problem.
Much more likable person is probably a bit pushing it because they're both quite famously racist. But it's just all getting very, very much like it feels like the walls are closing in on Red Bull at all angles at the moment. And if you walk away with a title come the end of this year, it might be really difficult to try and get another one next year. No matter what happens.
Yeah, and it's good for the sport. I mean, seven
oh,
wins
absolutely.
This season is fantastic. Albeit six of them won one race.
Well, so far.
Yeah.
I if I had to put money on it next weekend, I would feel like we're going to see a second repeat winner for someone. And
no.
I don't think it'll be...
At Belgium. Unless Max has engine pens, he's definitely winning Belgium. I'm not going to lie.
Well, you say that. This could be a McLaren track or a Mercedes track based on Silverstone. But
well, we'll do our predictions on Friday.
Well, we will on Friday, won't we? You know, there really is now kind of this sense that, you know, Red Bull could be in real, real trouble, whether it's sooner or later. And, you know, it might be that we go into 2026 and they are all over the show. You know, it might well be you have to keep Perez, so at least you've got one driver there who knows how the team works. If you had to bet on it now then, Jamie, because we haven't really spoke about this too much towards the end of the show, Perez, in that car, Dutch Grand Prix, yes or no?
Dutch Grand Prix is after the summer break, isn't it?
After the summer break,
I will
exactly.
say no.
Is he going to have a Formula 1 drive?
Not for the rest of this season. I think he would for 2025.
Could he go to Audi?
He could go to Audi. He could go to Haas, if they fancy. Or even Alpine. Who knows? Yeah, I think it would be Ricciardo driving for Red Bull and Lawson at Toro Rosso.
Well, this is what I was
going to
say. V-car, but yes. I think Ricciardo back to Red Bull now for the second half of the year, as much as I don't think it's the best choice, I do think it's the right choice, weirdly.
Well, it'll just like calm everything down almost, won't it? As long as he doesn't
He knows
start
what that
it.
Team's like.
Yeah.
He knows, obviously, how Max Verstappen operates. He's been his teammate before. Plus, on the other side of that, down at V-Carb, it gives you a fantastic opportunity to really put Lawson and Yuki against each other, one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, if Ricciardo does a great job, great. Keep the seat, whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. I wouldn't bet money on it happening. On the other hand, for next year, it gives you a real opportunity to work out which of these two you want in that car alongside Max.
Yeah.
Whether for better or for worse. Because let's be fair at the moment, Perez is doing a worse job than Albon or Gasly ever did in that car.
Right now, yeah, for sure. And Perez was really good in 21. He was exactly what they wanted, but now he's stinking the place.
He was nearly everything they wanted. They could have won the Constructors that year, I feel.
Yeah, true.
Don't get me wrong, wasn't like, you know, wasn't that he threw it away or anything, because obviously Bottas and Hamilton have been together and are very good friends for many years. But there could have been the opportunity for that time. There were a couple of race weekends where he went a little bit missing. But yeah, more recently, real problems. And I mean, this is the other thing as well, isn't it, with Red Bull. Last year, any track they were weak at, the gap went down from, you know, upwards of a second to 3/4 tenths. This year, suddenly you go from 2 tenths advantage to 3/4 tenths further behind. You've got a Max Verstappen that still clearly has proven this weekend can't control himself when the going gets tough.
All the time. Can't control himself.
Exactly. Problems.
Yeah.
Problems are brewing. Shall we do quiz, driver of the day, race rating predictions, everything like that? All that good stuff. What do you want to start?
Well, Piastri won. We haven't said that yet, but he did.
He did. Yeah, congratulations, Oscar Piastri. Happy with that. He deserves it. First ever FIA F3 winner to win a Formula One race.
Yeah,
first driver younger than both of us to win a Formula One race, which is really depressing.
Yes, and that's actually related to what your quiz is going to be on. Because he was born in April 2001.
The sixth,
which is horrible.
I believe, wasn't it? Yep.
Yes, it was the sixth. The first race after Piastri's birth.
Oh no! Oh, this is shocking.
The San Marino Grand Prix of 2001.
It seemed wild that Imola had a race in 1991, and I don't know why. I think it's because it had so many famous races. 2001.
Oh, I was going to say.
I think it's because there were so many good races after and before.
Yeah. No, it did have one then. So your challenge today, your quiz, is a minute to name anybody who qualified in the top eight or finished in the top eight of that
race.
How
many answers are there?
There's 10 answers.
Okay.
And your time starts now.
Michael Schumacher, Rubens Barrichello, Juan Pablo Montoya, Ralph Schumacher, Kimi Räikkönen was at Sauber, so not. David Coulthard, Mika Häkkinen.
You're doing well.
You've got
four left.
Jenson Button.
Nope.
And Giancarlo Fisichella.
Nope.
Jarno Trulli.
Yes.
You've got
30 seconds.
I'm trying to think. 2001. Jacques Villeneuve was still kicking around.
Nope.
2001. Oh, Jean Alesi, still there. He was in a pretty terrible car by then.
Yeah.
I said Häkkinen, didn't I? And Coulthard.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, that's okay.
15 seconds. Three drivers.
BAR. Olivier Panis?
Yes. Two more. 5 seconds.
I don't know. Can you give me their nationality?
They're actually both German, but you failed.
Oh,
you're 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Heinz Frentzen?
Yes.
Yep, and... Oh, other Germans. Other Germans. I said Ralph and Michael, didn't I?
You did, yes.
Other German? I know this is really obvious, isn't it? And
it's
really
obvious.
By not getting this.
A German who just sat around a lot in the mid-2000s.
Nick Heidfeld?
There you go. Job done.
Is he in 2001? He wasn't he?
Yeah.
Heidfeld, bizarrely, he felt young when we started watching Formula 1. But he really wasn't.
He's in his 30s. He's the OG Hülkenberg.
He is.
He was Hülkenberg before Hülkenberg
made it cool.
Yeah.
And my favourite stat is the fact that he has the most podiums without wins in both Formula 1
and
Formula E. It's so stupid.
He must have not won anything since about 1995.
He hasn't won anything since before either of us were born.
Yeah.
It's mad. Poor Nick Heidfeld.
Poor Nick Heidfeld.
Again, he's another one we could do a podcast on at some point. Because he was better than Robbie Kubica, but people forget about it.
Yeah.
We will die on that hill. Driver of the day then, Jamie183.
Oof.
It's a really odd one, isn't it? Because there was no real standouts, but there was a lot of drivers that did really well.
A guy getting his first win is quite good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give it to Oscar Piastri.
Yeah, you know what, I'll agree with you. I think
when
Charles Leclerc and Hamilton deserve shoutouts. Eh?
Who got the real one?
I don't know. I think it was Oscar.
Surely it was Piastri.
Surely it was Oscar, yeah. First win, you will, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You're not going to get it. Exactly.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Shout out to Max Verstappen's engineer GP. He was up there for driver of the day.
He was up there for cat fight of the day, absolutely.
Someone else was up there, was Max Verstappen into turn one on lap 63.
He was, yeah. So... too far up there.
Yes.
Race rating.
This is a weird one, because
it
was very entertaining, it was very funny, but mostly because of the team radio.
I look back through all our scores still and feel like some of them need nerfing.
Oh, the early ones are crazy.
Yeah.
The race rating was poor early season, early doors. We thought it was a rubbish season.
We probably rated everything prior to Japan. So Japan and backwards probably too high, I would have thought.
maybe one or two too high for sure.
Yeah.
But will go.
He got disqualified this weekend from another win. Whenever Richard Vachon's got an illegal car, he turns into primate and senna. It's insane.
Yeah. This sand is planked down every race and then trying not to get disqualified.
Oh, exactly.
I'll give a race rating of a 7.5.
I was going to say 6.5. But,
really?
Yeah. But you're saying 7.5. You reckon it's one of the best races of the year?
No, look at my ratings. That's same as Miami.
Exactly. Which
worse
is one of the best
Canada,
ratings you've
worse
given
than
this
Austria,
year.
Worse than Britain. Yeah, I'll give it that.
Fair enough.
It was good. It was up there.
Ah, predictions is painful. So I came into this one with a 2-point lead over Jamie183, and after I've had a couple of really Jamie183 results recently, you know, absolutely.
Scamming it.
just scabbing points away here and there. Jamie's gone back to his fine form. You said Russell on pole.
P17, we'll take that.
Yeah. You said Max Verstappen win.
0 points.
Yeah, I catch you. Can't laugh at that one. Norris P2, 2 points to you, sir. Yeah, jammy, so, yeah. Jammy person. And you said Russell P3.
The wrong Mercedes on the podium, sadly. Just you to did. Battle you, I think it was. Basically.
Exactly. I said Max pole, bottle job. Max win, whining bottle job. Hamilton P2, 1 point, thank you. And Norris P3, 1 point,
so
thank
we
you.
Both got 2 points.
Yep.
Being a doctor.
Yep. Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
So that means
we,
you
need, we need to do... We need to do three points if you get it bang on and two if you're one out, I reckon.
That will make it a lot more complicated and ruin my ability to blank
exactly.
2 points.
Exactly. No, the points stay as they are. But no, oh, I wait. Think... Well, I've still got a two-point lead. I'm like, I'm going to rank 50, which is not bad going so far this year. I feel like generally we've got better as the years have gone on.
Yeah, which like, is odd because nowadays seven drivers can score a podium any weekend. Yeah. Whereas back when we started, it was Hamilton and Verstappen
three.
Were locked in every race.
Especially Hamilton, Verstappen, and usually Bottas that would get a podium. Yeah, there we go. I think we talked about everything, haven't we, Jamie? We've done a good job.
We did. We did.
We'll be back hopefully Friday then with another show. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you drop a sub, drop a follow, all that good stuff. Tell us who your driver of the day was as well. And Jamie and I will return, ready to preview. You're not going to Belgium, are you, Jamie? I am.
No.
No, I didn't think so. No. That's fine. It's not fine. I'd be happy to see you go. I've got no personal thing against that. But yeah, we'll be back then later on this week, ready to preview the Belgian Grand Prix, the last race before the summer break.